and welcome back for another episode of the Social Hour podcast, a podcast for sewists by sewists. I'm your host, Ashley.
And I'm your host, Bethany. And on today's episode, we're diving into the topic of YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically for those who want to create a YouTube channel, a creative space to share their projects, tutorials. We've had so many people ask us to dive in on this topic and give our best tips and advice. And who better to ask than Ashley, who over here has 100K subscribers on her YouTube channel. And she's helped me tremendously over the last couple of years with building mine, and it's growing very quickly, and I'm loving that. So I think we're in a place where we can kind of dive into this topic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited.
Me too. I've been on YouTube for since 2008. So I have seen the evolution of YouTube over the years and the value that it brings to our community and to be able to bring, you know, teaching and just like sharing and documenting to the next level way more than Instagram and TikTok could ever do. Sorry, but it's true. YouTube is an amazing platform.
It is. I love that you mentioned like the documenting. To me, it's like an archive. Like you can go back and see your own growth, right? Of like your sewing skills, but your video skills, but your editing skills, like all of those things that it's just kind of an evolution. It's an archive of all of your work over the last few years or several years, which is really cool. So I'm excited to dive into this. But before we do, I just want to remind everybody that we are now doing a segment called Sewing Confessions. So if you haven't submitted a Sewing Confessions, there's a link in the description of this video. You can also go over to our YouTube and see it there, or our link in our bios on our social media. Or you just go to our website, thesocialhourpodcast.com. I mean, you can find it 10,000 different places, but it's a Sewing Confession. This is anonymous Sewing Confessions, by the way. So we don't know who you are. Unless you tell us. So please don't. But when you do give us these confessions, like we need all the detail because we end up with questions and we can't ask you. So we want to know all this, all the tea. This is anonymous. We're going to share it. We're excited to see the ones that we have so far. Please don't hold back. The good, the bad, the ugly. It's fun. It could be silly. It could be little. It could be big. It could be spicy. We're here for it. So we will be sharing a confession every week in our podcast, and we save those for the end. A little nugget to leave you with at the end of our segment. So anyways, be on the lookout for that and stay tuned for this week's confession. I'm so excited about that. All right, so let's dive into starting a YouTube channel as a sewing influencer. And we use that word influencer because you are teaching, you are influencing people to learn or to get inspired or share a tool that you love. And so we're going to kind of dive into the exciting and rewarding journey that can be YouTube. But we're not going to sugarcoat this. We're going to be very honest with you about our own journeys, our own experiences. Learn from things that we've done that might make your process maybe a little easier, or just to be in the know. Like I think the more I kind of went in blind, I didn't know a lot. I just kind of jumped in head first. That's my personality. I'll figure it out as I go. And some people need to know more to feel comfortable jumping in. So I'm hoping this episode will give you that knowledge so you can go, yes, this is something I want to start pursuing. Or maybe this isn't the right avenue for me. It's an undertaking.
For sure.
Wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
And if you're going to do it right.
Yeah. Also, this is sort of like the part two of one of our podcasts we did a few weeks ago. So if you're interested in just getting into the world of influencing it, whether it be like Instagram and TikTok, I would definitely recommend listening to that podcast first.
Yeah.
Because this is sort of like, now we're going off to horizontal video. That was like vertical video. Now we're doing horizontal. But we also like, we want you to know that starting off with Instagram and TikTok, it's good to get your feet wet, you know, before you get into the YouTube world. And by making those reels and TikToks and then taking those and then putting them on YouTube, as YouTube Shorts, just set up the account and take all those things and bring it over just so you can get the ball rolling kind of thing. Even if you're not ready to start making horizontal videos, at least you can start establishing your YouTube channel in the beginning. But we'll talk more about that. We're just going to go from, you know, in order sort of thing so that you can better prepare yourself for those things.
Yeah. So let's start with like defining your niche. So one thing that I feel like is important, and this applies to all social platforms. If you are going to set up a platform that's a creative space, like define your niche. And we talked about this in the previous episode. So Ashley's right. If you haven't listened to that one a couple weeks ago, where we talk about sewing, how to be a sewing influencer and how to set yourself up in that space. Definitely go listen to that, because that episode definitely dives in deeper into some of these topics that we're going to go through pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. But defining your niche is also very important on YouTube. What type of crafting projects are you going to be doing? Are you strictly quilting? Are you just sewing in general? Are you, all bag fiber making product mm-hmm. projects, you know, cause mine is like yarn and sewing. And only because my hand knit blanket tutorial blew up my YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't expecting that. So, or are you going to do more vlogging and less tutorial? So there's, you kind of have to define your niche and be consistent.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
And that's what's going to get your subscribers, the people that want to find your content, they're going to find it. And that's what's going to make them want to subscribe, because they know that you're consistently giving them the kind of content they want to see. If you're jumping all over the place and sharing all sorts of different things, mm-hmm. they're not going to know what you're about, and they're not going to subscribe, because there may be things on your channel that they don't want to see, but there was just one video that they were interested in. So that's not going to give them incentive to subscribe. So that's why mm-hmm. defining your niche is important.
Mm-hmm.
Create a unique selling proposition. So not everybody is selling a product. So like for us, we're selling our experience. We're creating value there. So just getting the subscribers and interactions on our videos and the shares and the comments and the likes, everything is really important on YouTube. So for us, this is where if you're not selling a product, you're not selling a pattern, you're not selling a course or anything, and you're just making video tutorials, this is where you kind of have to think of it as like you want to create something unique about your channel and how you present your content so that people want to invest in subscribing. That's free for them. It doesn't cost them anything, but the more subscribers, the more views, the more shares, the more you can get monetized on YouTube, which we will dive into a little deeper. Mm-hmm. So we need to define like your personal style, your teaching approach, the types of projects you choose. Again, this kind of goes back to your niche, but setting up something that makes you kind of unique. Mm-hmm. And this is where I feel like a lot of people are like, well, I don't want to do a video on that because somebody else did.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, so.
Yeah.
And I've had this conversation with my fiance many times. He's like, well, somebody's already done that. And I'm like,
So you did it differently.
You could do it too. And maybe you do it. Yeah. Maybe you do it differently. Maybe you do the same process, but your approach, your explanation, maybe you dive in a little deeper to help people understand it better. Maybe theirs was a sped up video and it just shows the process, but people can't really learn from it. Maybe you break it out into actual teaching. You know, like there's so many different ways to approach it. Maybe you make the exact same video and they just like how you edit it differently and yours takes off over there. Who knows? Yeah,
for sure.
But if you don't do something, like there's quilting's quilting, right? Bag making's bag making, but we're all garments are garments, but we're all putting content out there and we're all reaching different people. And sometimes, people just resonate with your videos more than others.
I think people think that if they put out the same stuff, that the people who are watching the videos that you're watching are going to be like, oh, mm-hmm. she totally copied them. But most of the viewers aren't watching the same YouTubers. So mm-hmm. yours will be brand new. They've never seen it before, you know? So we can't compare. That's the
no. Yeah, and I have a prime example of this because Jelly roll rugs are not a new thing.
No, yeah.
And I made a YouTube tutorial on jelly roll rugs. One of the things I noticed in a lot of the tutorials is they didn't really show you how to get started with the rug. Mm-hmm. That whole segment of most of these videos is just missing. And it was just kind of baffling to me why that's not there. I figured it out and I filmed a tutorial that included everything. My best tips, how to use the right needles, the importance of all these different things that are not really highlighted in any tutorial, written or video.
Wow.
And so I did if I was to want to learn how to do this from scratch, this is how I'm teaching. That's my mindset. If someone had taught me how to do this from scratch and I didn't have to figure it out on my own, this is what I would want to know. This is what was a game changer for me because I problem solved that on my own. And then so me, that's my value. I'm sharing what I've learned in my process of figuring it out. And I'm putting it out there. Now, if you go to my video on my jelly roll rugs, I think it's approaching 30,000 views or something, which is pretty good for my small channel.
Mm-hmm.
And the comments are consistent. They are consistently saying this is the best jelly roll video tutorial on YouTube.
Nice.
No one else has shown how to start the rug. This is the best tips. I tried this before and the only way I could get through this project was by watching your video. I wish I had found it sooner. The first time I tried, and that's so encouraging to me because I just thought, well, there's other jelly roll videos out there, but I really enjoy making these. And these are some of the tips that I felt like I wish I had known before I started. So I'm just sharing the whole thing start to finish. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't realize how much it was going to resonate with people. And it really has. That's the kind of unique proposition of making yourself stand out. What was missing from your education of figuring it out that you wish you had known? Share that, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of my thought on
it. Scouring the YouTube platform, and I want to make something. And then I go and look to see if somebody else has made it. And then I watch their videos and then I think, okay, how am I going to make my video better than theirs? And that's it.
Yeah.
Like, really? And then you get those comments like, wow, this is, I've watched so many of these videos and you're the only one that could explain it a way that I could understand.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was the big part and it makes me feel good as an educator because I was like, well, I hope that makes sense. I hope this was helpful. You know, I hope you're successful. And my comments are, this was the first time I've ever been able to successfully make a jelly roll rug because of your video, you know, and that's just, it makes you feel good that like you're able to give that kind of detailed information to help people be successful, even when I'm not getting to work with them one-on-one.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
That it's, I don't know, it's just really a fun feeling. So, okay. So let's kind of dive into equipment and setup. Because there's a lot of questions about this and, I think we are going to have both ends of the spectrum here. And there's no
right or wrong,
no right or wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think with the level of phone cameras these days,
right.
You can start a YouTube channel with a cell phone if you have a newer model. I'm not talking iPhone 6 over here,
at
y'all.
At least a 1080p and you're good to go. But now they're all 4K. Yeah. But you really, I mean, how far back does a 1080p phone camera go? Not like pretty far. So
yeah. So I feel like with a good phone, can I just say that like if you have an iPhone or any phone and you've got these camera lenses on the back, can you just take 2 seconds every time before you hit record to wipe it off?
Yeah, it makes massive difference.
So that you don't have your fingerprint smudge, because nothing's worse than recording content and then going back to look at it and going, why is it so blurry? And then you're like, oh, because like my whole handprint is on the the lens. And it happens so easily, especially on these newer iPhones where the lens, camera lens are like kind of protruding from the phone. And I have a cover over all of mine. Like it's a whole clear cover that covers all three. So I just have to wipe that. But take care of your lenses, clean them. I wipe them off multiple times before I hit film. every mm-hmm. single time.
Yeah.
So definitely take 2 seconds to do that. That's just like my little PSA, because y'all, photos, video, it doesn't matter. Wipe your camera lens.
Yeah.
So I think you can do a lot with a cell phone, and you need a tripod. I have so many different types of tripods. I have just the vertical ones. I have the boom arms that clamp to a side of a table. I have overhead ones. I mean, it just depends on the type of video content you're doing. I now have one that I wear around my neck.
Yes, you do.
I have a neck mount. If you haven't seen my stories on Instagram, I can share it. And I need to make a reel about it. It's yeah, super cool, but it gives me that point of view of the sewing machine that's hard to get. And so, you know, there's so many different resources out there. I have my filming equipment linked in my Amazon storefront, because most of it so I purchased off Amazon. Mm-hmm. So we'll put those links in the description so you can see Ashley and I's current setup.
I only have what I use in my Amazon storefront. So there's no, like, I don't just put whatever in there. I'm like, this is what I have.
And tried and true.
Yeah, exactly.
Same. So I think having mounts, you don't want to be hand holding the camera, because it gets wobbly. You really do need it mounted, and then adjust the camera angle for different things.
Can we just talk about orientation? Because if you're used to Instagram and TikTok, then you're used to being vertical.
Yes.
And that's up and down, right?
Yes. It's
lengthways. But when you're on YouTube, if you're doing a YouTube video, you need to be horizontal, because people who go to YouTube, they expect horizontal video, and they get really annoyed if there is all these black bars on the side of the video, and then they're like, nope, they will skip that video. They're like, I'm not gonna, I don't care how valuable your content is on YouTube. Yeah. They get annoyed and they skip.
So basically, leave the vertical camera angles for Reels, TikToks, and YouTube Shorts. So YouTube does have their own version of, like, Reels. They're 60 seconds max. And that's a vertical video. And so those videos that you're already making for Instagram or TikTok or even Facebook Reels, like, put those as your shorts on YouTube. So there's vertical shorts on YouTube. Those are the short little clips. And then there's the horizontal longer videos. And those are going to be your more in-depth tutorials, your vlogs, those kind of things. And so when you're making content, keep that in mind. Nothing's worse than filming an entire tutorial this way out of habit and then going, oh, crap.
Yeah.
I need to. So definitely make sure that you're, like, going into the mindset of, I am filming a YouTube tutorial or YouTube video in full length, and I need to rotate my orientation on my camera. It does take some getting used to. But Ashley's right. If I see a video that's vertical, but it's in that horizontal plane because it's longer than 60 seconds, I'm like, nope. So we talked about cameras. Now, when you get, well, let's just go through the basics.
We didn't talk about all cameras, because I don't use a phone.
Well, let's just talk about the basics first, because this is just to get you started, because that's who we're really talking to here, is, like, people who haven't even started a YouTube or just a few videos. So you can do a lot with your phone. The other key thing besides phone and phone stand is lighting. I will skip a video in 2.5 seconds or less if the video is dark, there's shadows, it's hard to see. Lighting. I cannot preach it enough.
And it's so affordable on Amazon now.
It is.
Like, we'll link them.
Ashley just got the same ones that I have.
Yep. I have a ring light that I love. And then, the square ones that you have there's like 60 LEDs in each one.
Yeah. They're really bright. They're dimmable. You can adjust them. I got the 2-pack. I also have another bar light that clips to my table that I can move, like, over the machine or to the front of the machine for better lighting right on the machine. So, or overhead of my cutting or ironing. So good lighting in every aspect of your video.
But the reason why you need good lighting
so important
is because it actually downgrades the quality of your camera also, because your camera is straining to collect as much light as possible. So it's not just the fact that it's dark, it's also the fact that now your camera has downgraded the quality, so you can't get that 1080p anymore.
No, well, it also makes it blurry.
Yeah,
and exactly. Hard to
it's
see.
Just the whole thing is just bad, and then it might even make it laggy, and then like the speed of the video won't be. It's yeah. just it's so important, and even just like if you have a really good light, like or mm-hmm. not like, but a really good window, you know, a huge window, you maybe
natural light
you,
is
you only
helpful.
Film at like you know 2 o'clock in the afternoon when the light is the most beautiful. Like it doesn't have to be actual artificial light if you want to be more consistent. With your lighting, then you want to go
and be able to film whenever.
Right. But if you're, you know, you can't quite spring for that yet, then, you know, a really good window will take you pretty far.
Yeah. Yeah. But then you're limited to the time of day.
Yes, you are.
If it's a pretty day out, like if it's a cloudy, mm-hmm. rainy, gloomy day, mm-hmm. or if the sun's too bright, you know, so there's that aspect. And then all of your filming has to be done right in front of that window. So you're bringing everything to that space. So for me, I want to set up the space and I actually eliminate the light. The natural light, mm-hmm. so I can control the light. So if I'm filming at 8 o'clock in the morning or 8 o'clock at night, you'll never know the difference.
Yeah.
And that's how I'm creating that consistency. But that's because I have gotten to the point where I have a dedicated filming space because mm-hmm. of my job and podcasts and everything in my YouTube. So for me, it makes sense. Not everybody has that luxury. So if you need to create consistency in lighting, these LED lights that I have, they are very small, portable, easy to set up, easy to take down, easy to store. They're not like the big umbrella lights that I used to have.
That's when I started.
And these are so much better. They don't get hot. It doesn't heat up my space. Mm-hmm. So I'm not like over here sweating. I used to be over here sweating and had the fan on and the
I had like the big CFL bulbs and then if you knock it over,
bye-bye bulb.
Smash.
And those umbrella lights are top heavy.
Oh, for sure.
I have knocked them over so many times.
The stands are garbage. I'm sorry, but they are. So
they are. And the volume of light that comes out mm-hmm. is minimal compared to these LEDs.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
My lowest setting on these LEDs is still brighter than those umbrella lights.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's a big game changer. And the other thing I want to mention is if you have like, I'm sitting here with a window behind me, I have blocked the light coming in because my camera is picking up that light, so it darkens my face.
Right.
So you got to think about that. Like, you want the light coming towards your face. And if there's any light, like a window or anything behind you, you need to eliminate that light because otherwise, like you said before, Ashley, your camera is competing with those counteractive lights and it's going to darken your face or darken whatever you're trying to put focus on. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't look well. So I have my light blocked. You cannot see through this window right now because if I did, then my lights coming towards me wouldn't be able to compete with that. My camera gets confused. Mm-hmm. So these are just things that you need to like, before you start recording your content, hit record, sit in front of it, act like you're doing things, you know, maybe pretend to stitch out something or pretend to talk to the camera or whatever. Pause, stop it, and watch it back.
Where are you getting shot? Video on your computer. Because
look at it full screen.
Yeah, sometimes on the actual camera, it won't actually register the right way.
And when you're viewing, like even if you're just going to view it on your phone, when you're viewing your content back, or when you're editing photos on your phone or video on your phone, like a lot of people don't leave their phone at like the full brightness because it's so bright, but you need to look at your content at full brightness so that when you're editing it, you know what it really will look like, you know, because if you're editing it with the dim light on your dim brightness on your phone, you're going to over brighten, you know what I'm saying? So I always, whether I'm editing a reel, a photo in light, I have Lightroom on my phone to do quick photo edits and things like that. I always turn my camera up to the full brightness so that I can see how bright this video is at full brightness. So when I dim my camera back down, it's still bright enough to see. And I'm not, because there are people that leave their camera on full brightness. So I don't want to blind them if I over brighten. So it's just, these are just things, but lighting is so important. Lighting is so important. So we have basic phone is fine. Phone stand. Get a couple of try a couple different ones. We've got some linked for you guys. Lighting, we'll link those. Ashley really likes the ones that I have, so she got them for herself and she's loving them. So we'll link those.
Yeah. And the ring light. I have a 10-inch ring light, which is what I'm using right now. And I actually really, really like it a lot.
I have a ring light too. As a glasses wearer, I cannot have a ring light in my facing my face. Because I will get the rings on the glasses. And for anybody who films content with a ring light and wears glasses, please stop pointing that ring light right in your face. Set it off to the side or something. Yeah. You'll still get the light.
Yeah.
Or raise it up high and tilt it down a little. You'll still get the brightness. But when you eliminate the glare in your lens, you I feel like I can see your eyes. When I see those glares, I can't see anything else. I'm not hearing what you're saying. All I can see are these ring lights and it drives me nuts. And I move on from your video every time. I don't care what kind of value you're adding. If I can see the ring light in your glasses, I'm not paying attention. And I am annoyed and I move on. I don't even watch it. I'm being honest. Okay. Maybe that's my confession.
I think that's because that's something that you try to prevent. So that's something that annoys you because you are on YouTube and social media.
Right. Well, and I film professionally for work. So I have to wear my glasses.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now I have lights in front of me. But you don't see the glare on my glasses right now. Now, if I were to tilt my head towards the light, you can see them. You can see the squares from the LED lights that I have.
Right. Yeah.
But because I set it off to the side, but still facing me, and I have a counter one over here, so I'm still getting light from both sides, so I'm not getting shadow, I don't have glare on my glasses. If I were to point towards this bar light that I have over here, you can see the glare on my glasses right now. But I don't look at the bar light. I look at the camera in front of me. And now I get all the light without the glare. So it's all about positioning. The light does not have to be directly in front of your face or right behind your camera. Mine never are. And then I also have a second light over here to light up this whole corner that I'm in. So light distribution is so important. I'm not a professional lighting person, but
isn't that interesting?
Play around with it. It's been a learning curve. I figured out what works in my space. You're going to have to figure out what works in your space. I obviously have a light background. I have faux brick. This is peel and stick wallpaper, by the way, from Amazon. So I have a faux brick. I have some texture behind me. It's not just a plain white wall. So again, it helps with not getting feedback and too bright behind me. There's just all these kind of things that you kind of have to think about, and you figure this out as you go. Okay. Yes. So don't feel like you have to
on the first video.
If you want your videos to be crisp and clear and you want people to tune in and watch, lighting is so important.
First impression.
So important.
Yeah.
Right. Outside of that.
For a beginner,
I don't think you really need anything else. You can get one light, one phone stand and your phone and you can start recording. If you are going to start doing a lot more or even do live streams, that's when we want to elevate. So when I do my live streams for work, I will use up to 3 or 4 different cameras because I'm live streaming. So I don't want to have to move my camera every time I go to a different area of the project. So I have my head on camera that you see right here with that I use for a podcast too. I have a camera that will go onto the machine for the sewing. I have an overhead camera that is for my cutting area. And I'll even, if I have any pressing that I need to show, I'll have an overhead camera for that as well. That is when I have 2 phones, my work and my personal. So I'll use both of those. I have my main camera here that I use for the podcast that shockingly is a document camera. And it's stationed. I leave it there. It is phenomenal. And then I'll throw in another little box camera. But if I need it, but yeah, I kind of just.
That's for your live stream. So you're able to toggle through each one.
Now, let me tell you how I toggle through them.
Mm-hmm.
I have something called a switcher box.
Mm-hmm.
And all of my cameras plug into this one switcher box through HDMIs. And each one is assigned a number, 1, 2, 3, 4. So the camera that I'm using for the podcast is number 3. And so I know which one's which. And then as I'm going through my tutorial, I'll reach over and hit the number for the camera I'm going to next. And so I can toggle between the cameras.
That's advanced right there. And guess yes. who has never been advanced?
Ashley, I have to for work because I'm live streaming with Michaels or those kind of things.
For sure.
And I need to be able to jump around. And it's a whole setup. So kind of what I shared in my stories the other day of I was moderating my boss's live stream that she did for Michaels. She only used 2 cameras that day for what she was demonstrating. I typically will have 2 to 3. I've done 4 before, but I try to stick to 3 or less because then I'm like in a web of cords. I try to make it as seamless as possible because if I have to move the camera while they're watching the live scene, it's nauseating. And so I typically will switch to another camera, my main camera. So while I'm moving if I have to move a camera, it's not what they're seeing.
Right.
So that they're not getting seasick. Mm-hmm. But again, this is for live streaming.
Right. And if you do like just regular YouTube video, like you can take that camera and you can move it around your
you
room.
Can.
You know? It takes way longer.
It does.
If you don't have the money to be able to buy 2
this
or 3
is what
cameras,
you work towards, right? Like you work
or
towards
not.
That.
I mean, I haven't still.
Right. But for it me, like if I was to live stream on YouTube, that would
live
be
stream
setup.
Is a whole other beast. And I feel like that's a whole other podcast.
We should probably make it a whole nother podcast.
Yeah.
Because I have opinions about successful live streaming. But you can work up to having multiple camera setups. It's up to you. Personally like to get all my cameras set up to film so that I can switch and film all of it from different angles and switch between my cameras so I don't cuts down my time, but that's because I have the setup to do so.
Right.
It's not necessary, but I do think that if you want to make it efficient, it can be very, if you work up to that, so we've told what the beginners need. I'm just saying this is where I have a boom mic. I have my switcher box. I have a lapel mic now that I'm using, which is very helpful for when you're not right next to your phone. That's your mic. So there's not an echo or distance. Lapel mic, I got 2 in a little charging box and they're amazing. And they just plug right into my phone.
Yeah.
And they charge in the little charging box and they were, I think, less than $30.
Mm-hmm.
I'll link them on my Amazon. I haven't added them yet.
I think I got the same one, but I don't know if I got a lemon, but it doesn't sound very good. In my opinion,
I just bought these. These are new. These are an upgrade from what I got for work.
I just bought them too.
Really?
Yeah, I've tried them. I have never used them in a video. You won't see them. But is it the one that has like the different ports that come out of the thing that plugs into your phone?
No.
Oh, okay. Then maybe it's not the same one.
No.
But
when I do my live streams from in here, I don't use the lapel mics because I haven't. Because I'm using so many different cameras and the mic can only be plugged into one. So I use my podcast mic.
Yeah.
And I actually put it up above me. So you can't see it on camera at all, but it's like a boom arm mic, a boom mic, and it will pick up my audio no matter where I'm positioned and which camera I'm working on. It's up above. So again, it's just testing those things out, recording yourself, listening to the playback, and those kind of things. Well, I recommend using a mic if you're going to be recording audio while you're filming.
Just so you know.
Because it will help these mics, like the
condensers.
They actually help eliminate background noise. So it really does help eliminate like the background noise of your neighbor mowing, right?
That's true.
Pick that up. So it like
don't
my son's,
record when your neighbors are mowing. if you're not using a mic. No,
you can if you use a mic. And you test the audio, like you record a little clip with the mic on and then you listen to the playback. And if you hear any noise, then you may need to make adjustments, but, or wait. But for the most part, the microphones eliminate a lot of the background noise. And even when I'm live streaming, sometimes it goes as far as to eliminate the noise of the sewing machine. So people think that's like the quietest sewing machine in the world. Yeah. And I'm like, no, it's just my microphone. But what's helpful is when I'm live streaming, because it takes out the noise of the sewing machine sewing, I can still talk about what I'm doing and I don't have to yell. You know what I mean? I can talk in my normal voice, even though the machine is loud for me. They don't hear it in the Zoom class. And so they hear just my voice and I can talk about what I'm doing and it's not just silent for them. So there's those kind of things, but you can work up to it. I have all of my equipment.
Or you don't have to work up to it because I still haven't. And I've been on YouTube for 10 years.
But you don't do a lot of like live streaming or anything.
I don't. And that's when I would have to up my game. But for regular tutorials, I just use I use a DSLR that I've had forever. And I have it mounted on the wall with, it's a mount that like I can mount it on so that the camera looks straight down. And then I use my phone for when I'm filming at the
sewing machine.
And then that's it. That's all I need.
I do have a nice camera like that, like a Nikon. And I do have an overhead mount and stuff like that. And I really haven't dove into using it as much as I should.
What do you use over your cutting table?
My phone.
Oh, well, see, that's the thing is the phone is just, it's really that good. So
it's like, that easy. And you know what makes it even easier is it's an iPhone and I'm editing all my software on my MacBook so I can just AirDrop it. And sometimes getting the footage off of my professional camera is such a pain in the butt that I don't want to deal with it.
Oh, yeah.
I don't mind it, really. And the other thing I think about is if I'm filming the other segments with my phone, and that's one quality of video, even though my camera is good, there is a difference. And that kind of bugs me sometimes. That's just me, though. But for the most part, I use my phone, even for my live streams.
Let's talk about video editing. Yeah, that was a long little segment there, but
It was important because I think we get a lot of questions about, do I need a high-end camera to film YouTube? Do I need to invest all this money?
And no way.
The end of the day, I think we just debunked, you don't need those things.
People message me all the time. You can build up to
those things.
Yeah.
But it's not necessary.
Yeah, for sure. All right,
video editing.
So if you're a Mac user, what do you use? iMovie?
Okay. So two things. I use iMovie to initially edit because it's such a simple software, but it is also very, doesn't have a lot of like the flashy fun things that you can do or a lot of options for adding text on screen and those kind of things. So I will do most of my editing in that. Because I've gotten really good with the shortcuts and it's just easy.
Like the cutting.
Yeah, it's a very simplified, free video editing that comes on Macs. And so I will do that. And then, if I feel like I need to add text on screen or get a little more creative with my audio or sound effects or any of those kind of things, I will export it and take it into a program called Movavi, I think is what it's called, Movavi. It's another free editing software.
Okay.
Diana turned me on to it. She has a Mac as well, and it is what I use anytime I'm adding text on screen. Ooh. So when I do I edit all of my videos for Singer that go on our YouTube, sometimes I will add more text than sometimes I go full text on screen. Sometimes I go full voiceover. And so that determines if I'm going to do text on screen, I'm going to export it out of iMovie and put it into Movavi to do that because they just have so many more editing options. And I have the free version. I've never paid for it. They do have a pro version where you can do a lot more and that's
transitions and effects.
But if you're a beginner at learning how to edit long form video, horizontal video, and you have a Mac, iMovie is a great beginner editing. And that's what I use 95% of the time.
Nice. Well, so, as a PC user, I use a program called DaVinci Resolve, and that is, again, another free version of a really good editing software. So, I don't think you need to do anything more than that. You can get the paid version, but DaVinci Resolve is, like, I just discovered it, like, a year ago, and it's like, oh my god, this is amazing! Because I've been paying for Sony Vegas Studio for years, and it is the literal worst. So, but yeah.
Good to know.
There's so many video tutorials on YouTube teaching you how to do it, and that's basically how we learn. We just went onto YouTube and learned how to edit our videos. And you don't need to do anything fancy, you know, you just need to learn how to cut things out. And maybe add in a little transition, maybe a title on the screen. You really don't have to get fancy when it comes to, you know, it's really about the camera work if you want to get fancy, I think, with people. Yeah. It's just like the documenting and the A roll and the B roll and all that stuff. I don't even really do that stuff. So
I will say with the iMovie, they have this feature and it's the magic wand. And it's kind of like the auto fix. So when I first put my footage, before I clip anything, when I first put my footage into iMovie, and I do this for our podcast, I hit that magic wand because it enhances not only the video quality, like the colors and the lighting and everything automatically adjusts it. It enhances the audio. So it sounds crisp and clean and at an even volume. And it's really nice. And then after I do that to the whole clip, then I will start editing it down. So I don't have to do that to every single little clip after I've edited, which I've done because I forgot. But it's really helpful. And it's just kind of like that first layer of, oh yeah, that's nice. Yeah. So
I don't know.
I'm telling you, they make it super easy these days.
But I have no idea. I just
the magic wand.
they I just got it updated, so there's just so many things that I don't know about. I don't know about it, but
I will say because I use really good lighting and really careful about like my video filming portion, that when I use the magic wand, I don't really see a difference in the video quality, but it's the audio that I like. The audio buffing that out is where I'm getting, because my video quality is already really good because I have good lighting and those kind of things. So
I have to actually adjust our videos for the podcast. When I bring in the reels into DaVinci, there's a section for audio editing. It's called Fairlight. And for some reason, when you listen to the audio, you can only hear it in one headphone. So I have to fix it so you can hear it in both.
That's so weird.
I know. And you don't know that when you're on a computer and you can listen to through the sound, but you put your headphones on and then you listen to your editing and you're like, oh, I can only hear it in my like right ear or something.
Huh.
And I'm like,
I didn't know it did that.
Some people have complained.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know. I'm sorry, guys.
That was a long time ago though. So
you never told me.
Well,
I edit all my reels on my phone. Ashley and I have very different opinions on when to use a computer and when to use a phone for editing.
Always use a computer. Because computers are more powerful than phones.
I agree to use a computer to edit your video for long form horizontal video.
Yay! That's all I want to hear. Nothing else. That's all I've ever done.
That is, for the record, that is all I've ever done. But when it comes to short form vertical reels,
you can do it on the computer. I do it
always do it on my phone.
I do it on the computer.
And for the record, I have a free app called InShot that I use.
I use CapCut.
I have CapCut too, but InShot is the one that I have been with for so long.
It's a special place in your heart.
I just am so comfortable with it. I don't learning a new program if it ain't broke. So I have InShot that I use for my reels. Someone asked me the other day, do you edit your reels in Instagram? And I said, absolutely not. Because every time I've tried to film a quick clip and edit it in Instagram, I want to throw my phone.
It crashes too.
It crashes. And I lose everything I filmed. I lose everything that I had just edited. And at that point, I'm like, well, I'm just not posting this. I'm done. I'm over it.
Mark, what is... And get your stuff together, man. Like, come on. Mark Zuckerberg.
So, yeah. Thanks for clarifying.
Just in case somebody doesn't know.
For photo editing, I do use Lightroom.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I will...
That's her photographer in her.
Yeah. So... That is my photo editing, because I will put a nice cover photo with my reels and those kind of things.
And we use Canva too for like thumbnails.
That was going to be my next one. So to create the content, if you make a full length video for YouTube, it is highly recommended that you make a little short intro and a little short outro that is consistent for all of your videos. This is just going to, it takes no time to make it. Yeah. It just gives it like an elevated look. You're not just jumping right into your tutorial. Mm-hmm. So I use Canva to make these. They're 5 to 10 seconds max.
Mm-hmm.
Max. After 10 seconds, you lose people. So mine is like 5 to 10 seconds. I have some little music, which we'll talk about in a second. And I use a template off of Canva. There's free version of Canva. I have the pro version because I use it for work too, but the free version, there's so many templates. You can literally search YouTube video intro and it literally has the template of the size that it needs to be. And they have all these fun templates that people have already created that you can use. A lot of them are free, but there are paid versions unless you have the pro. And then, you know, you can go in and edit and change the colors and put your photo in there and edit the font and put your own wording. Mm-hmm. And it's got all these like animated elements. It takes 2 seconds and then you save that. And that is every time that is your intro video to your video.
Mm-hmm.
Or you change the font to say the words to say what the video is about, or you put the picture of the project that you're making, but the rest of the video intro is the same. And then I do the same for YouTube thumbnail. That is the thumbnail that is like the cover photo for your video. So when they're scrolling through your feed or your channel, they see those cover photos and it pops out and says, this is what this video is about. It's very clear. It needs to be minimal. It needs to have a clear photo of what the project or tutorial is about and a very simple text, big font so that they can see what it is. If there's too much going on the cover photo, they're going to keep scrolling. It's too busy.
Yeah.
So that's my tips on cover photos. And again, in Canva, you can search YouTube thumbnail template and it'll pull up. You can make a blank one or you can build from a template that's existing and then just save them and keep editing those for every video. But that consistency gives that your channel a professional feel.
Mm-hmm. In Canva, they do have the option of adding audio. We've had a little bit of trouble with that when it comes to copyright, but they do have... YouTube has free royalty-free music if you want to add that into your intro. So just keep that in mind that if you need any music, I would get it from YouTube itself.
Right. So how that works is, and Ashley and I've learned this, because our original intro to our podcast when we first started was audio that I pulled from Canva because it was royalty free, right? So it was like
allegedly
free to use. Yeah. But that was for Canva and that did not translate to YouTube. And so that flagged us once we became monetized. So we were like, or even before then. So we were like, well, you got to change the music for our intro. Mm-hmm. So if you were here at the beginning, you might've noticed that this music that intros our podcast changed at one point. It's been a long time. And that was because of that. So then what I did is I went to YouTube and you can download the music right off of YouTube. Okay. Yeah. So you go through and listen to the clips, you find the one that you like. I have several that I have saved on my computer that I use for, I have one that I use for our podcast, obviously. So we're consistent, but then I have a couple that I'll use as like my background music in the segments where I'm sped up my sewing.
Mm-hmm.
In my video tutorial, I'll do some sped up portions of where I'm just sewing over and over. Mm-hmm. I'll add some music there and I have some video or some music pulled from YouTube that I save on my computer specifically for that, and that I like. So you can, if you pull it from YouTube and then edit it into your video or edit into your intro outro on Canva, it will translate once you upload it to YouTube to be compliant so that you can stay monetized or not get flagged for anything.
But that being said, the you won't, like, you don't get a mark on your YouTube channel if you use not royalty-free music.
Right.
It's just that if you want to monetize it, which you mm-hmm. won't be monetized until you hit 1,000 subscribers and you have 4,000 watch hours.
We're going to dive into what monetization means,
but when
though.
That time comes, that mm-hmm. video that's way back there that had that non-royalty-free music on there, once you get monetized, it's going to stay unmonetized. And if that thing blows up,
you're losing money.
You're going to be not happy.
We were just talking about, Ashley mentioned monetization. And of course, the reason people want to start a YouTube channel to build content and all of that is to get to the point of monetization. There are milestones you have to hit with YouTube to become monetized. And so I'm going to let Ashley kind of share what those milestones are and what those terms mean to help clarify what that is, so you kind of know what your goals are when you're starting your YouTube channel. Is that the best way for me to say that?
I think so.
Okay.
On YouTube, you have two categories of how to get monetized. You have your shorts, which are have their own goals, and then you have your horizontal video, which has their own goals. For shorts, you need at least 20 million watch hours.
That's a lot, y'all.
And usually shorts, they're more likely to get more views just because they're part of that algorithm. Mm-hmm. But it's still a lot. So what we recommend is going with the, you know, if you're doing the long form video, then I would focus on that. Really, mm-hmm. you still need the 1,000 subscribers for both.
Okay.
But you need 20 million for the shorts, which is
watch hours.
Which is like every time someone watches a video, like if they watch 10 seconds of that video, that 10 seconds goes into the bank. So mm-hmm. if they watch 10 minutes of a video, then that 10 minutes goes into the bank. So the longer mm-hmm. the videos, the more you're going to get from a person, especially if they're able to retain that viewership for longer.
Yeah.
With a horizontal video, you're going to need 4,000 watch hours, which isn't a lot. It is a little bit of a grind, though, in the beginning.
Yeah.
So if you're able to get a video to take off in the very beginning, things will move along a little faster. But sometimes you're sitting there with over 4,000 watch hours, but just not enough subscribers. And that's how we were with the social hour.
That's how we were for the podcast, for sure. We had the watch hours.
We did,
We didn't have the subscribers. And so once we got the subscribers, then we were monetized because we had already checked the box for the watch hours.
Yes.
For my personal YouTube channel, Craft with Bethany, I had the subscribers, but not the watch hours.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I also wasn't posting a ton of content. But what pushed me over the edge was one of my videos took off.
Mm-hmm. And that was will my happen, right.
That that's just what
all of a sudden.
Well, and it happened like 9 months after I posted that video,
right?
So it was my hand knit blanket, my chunky hand knit blanket tutorial,
mm-hmm.
and right before the holidays, people found it, started sharing mm-hmm. it, because they were wanting to make them for Christmas gifts. And it blew up, but I had posted it like 8 months before or something. Mm-hmm. And now that video has almost 300,000 views.
Wow.
I know. It has made me thousands of dollars off that one video. And I posted it 2 years ago, which is wild.
It's called evergreen content.
Yes. Though,
is kind of, that's what we do as influencers, is we create videos that mm-hmm. are relevant years to come and will always be making money, which is amazing.
So, So that video really does well year round, but it mm-hmm. really sees a spike in the fall and going into Christmas and then even after Christmas. Mm-hmm. And so that was what pushed me over the edge and got me monetized a year ago. So I've actually only been monetized for a year. Or was it 2 years ago?
And you need...
I can't remember.
No, I think it's been a year. And you need
been a year.
So you have to sign up for AdSense. It's
okay, so
Google
let's talk
AdSense.
About that. Because so let's say you do get monetized. How do you get paid from YouTube? Yeah. So how do you get paid from YouTube? And you have, you go through Google AdSense. Mm-hmm. And when you are on YouTube, it'll walk you through the steps of how to, and you can set up this process before you actually get monetized so that when you are, it just kind of switches over. Mm-hmm. But, and it can take a little time for that transition. So it's not going to happen instantly the second you hit those watch hours or the second you hit those subscribers and you've checked all the boxes to get monetized. It's not going to happen instantly. There is some time that it'll take, but go into AdSense through YouTube to set up that account before you get to that point.
Yeah.
And really does help with that transition.
Use the same Google account that you use for your YouTube account so that everything links together.
Mm-hmm.
And then, once you get to $100, then you get a payout. So that's the threshold, is that you have to make $100 before they're going to send you any money.
Yes. And, you get payouts once a month.
Yes.
Once a month. For previous month's content tracking. Mm-hmm. You can track all of that in, YouTube Studio, which is where you can look at all of your analytics. I love, this is the nerdy side of me. I love keeping my YouTube Studio up. I look, I can see live stream, like lifetime, real time, how many subscribers I have, my watch hours, my cash money, honey, all of it. I can see it all real time and I can see it for every 28 days, which is like the payout schedule. Or, you know, I can see it by week. I can see which videos are bringing in the money and the views, which ones are popping off.
You can see their, like, the demographic. Is it women or men watching your videos? What age group? So, you know, like,
where they're watching from?
Yeah.
Where's my audience? You know, like,
I have a lot of people from the Philippines who watch my videos for some reason.
I do.
It's very interesting.
I noticed that the other day. I was like, in Australia, I have a lot of people from Australia, which is kind of cool. What's up, peeps?
Not a lot of Canadians, which I'm disappointed.
I have a lot in the U.S., obviously. Yes, but
that's the number one.
Yeah.
So, I do a lot of things that relate. Like, people get mad at me because I'm Canadian. They're like, why are you doing it in inches? And I'm like, well, the majority of my, you know.
That's why it's important to pay attention to these things.
Yeah, your audience is in inches, and I get more views from them. So I kind of cater to them. But
yeah.
Even though the rest of the world is centimeters.
Because us, you know, us Americans, if you did it in centimeters, we'd be like, yeah, no, we're not watching this tutorial.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, it is what it is. Oh my gosh. Well, Ashley, I'll ask her, like, hey, how, what's this measurement for this pattern that I'm editing? And she's like, 100 and something centimeters. Like, in inches, please. In inches. And she has to do the math.
Yeah.
I give her a hard time, but I'm like, my brain doesn't think that way. Sorry. It's not how I was trained.
But I'm also like half and half. My parents were raised with inches, and then it changed
really
in 1973, I think it was, or something. So when they talked to me, they would talk to me in inches. And even like our wood is all from the US. So we have the same, you know, 2x4s and all that stuff. So everything is very crossed over, so it's really hard to get a gauge. Like, if you said 2 inches to me, I can picture that. But if you say like 5 centimeters, I'm like,
oh, I don't know. No clue.
Yeah.
No clue.
Same thing.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Pretty much.
Shows how much I know. I can't.
It's 2.34, but yeah.
Well, then it's not the same.
It's close enough.
No.
I mean, we're not, if we want to get really, really precise, then okay, fine.
Maybe. You're, So I feel like we have talked about a lot. We don't want to overwhelm you all with YouTube, but there are so much more to this topic. There's other things that we want to talk about, you know, creating a content calendar, getting SEO optimizations. Like, we're going to dive in deeper to this because we know it's important and it's stuff that you all need to know if you're serious about starting a YouTube. So what we decided to do is make a second podcast on this topic where we're going to take it a step further. So with that being said, we want you to listen to this podcast, do your homework, start diving in, let us know what questions you have that we can answer. And then we are going to dive in deeper with our next podcast to take it the next step.
We can talk about live streams in that one, I think, too.
Yeah, let's do that. We'll include live streaming in that because you can live stream on YouTube. And so we're going to dive in deeper so that this episode is not 2 to 3 hours long. We're going to segment this out.
Passionate because about YouTube.
We are, but we also want to set you guys up for success. And the reason we're taking so much time on this topic is because how many screenshots did I send you of people sending me DMs or commenting on our previous YouTube videos for our podcast saying, I need to know more about YouTube. How do I do YouTube? They want this information. So you ask, you shall receive. And we're going to do it right and thorough. So with that being said, tune in next week for part two of continuing YouTube topic and diving in deeper of really setting yourself up for success. So I hope this has been helpful. Before we wrap up today, we need you to go subscribe to our newsletter so that you are in the know of all of this. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, guys. Yes, we'd appreciate that. It costs you nothing. We appreciate it. When you do set up your YouTube channel, let us know and we'll go subscribe.
Yes, message us on Instagram.
Sharing is caring. Yep. And lastly, let's end the day with our sewing confession of the week. Confession, man, I'm thrown and I don't know what to do. I guess I gotta keep part two of my confession. This week's sewing confession says...
Oh, gosh.
Y'all ready?
Mm-hmm.
This is from a listener, okay? This is not our
judgment-free
opinion.
Judgment-free zone.
Sewing police and quilt police are eggplant emojis. Just going to put what she put, okay? So sewing police and quilt police are eggplant emojis.
Yeah.
No one likes you and you are not adding anything of value to this community. They said what they said.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. We're going to leave you with that, guys. Hope you have a wonderful sewing week. And we will see you back here next week for part two of growing a YouTube channel. All right, guys. See you next week. Happy sewing.
Bye.